make a turn that around and say that that's true, parts are Catholic, parts are non-Catholic, but they would say that the whole man is basically good.
Yes.
They would.
They say leprosy is good health.
Right.
That's what the Mormons say.
They would agree with us on the bottom part, but on the top they would disagree.
Absolutely, yes. They say the whole thing is healthy.
So
they say leprosy is healthy.
Few here and there.
The modernists, as Archbishop Lefebvre once said, the modernists are like a doctor who says disease is health. Right? And that makes life easy for him. Because he doesn't have to bother to try and cure anybody, because disease from now on is good health. So everybody's got a disease is in good health. Therefore, he needn't bother to do anything, so he can lie down and take a snooze.
And you play around with the Novus Ordo because it is partly Protestant, so eventually you lose your faith.
If you do play around with it, yes. But when you see this, this is the reason for walking away. Since it's bad as a whole, you don't fool around. For instance, it's obvious that if you tell a mother, Mother, I bought a cake for your children. This cake is poisoned in 1/8, but the other 7/8 are very, very good. What mother will ever feed such a cake to her children? Obviously not. It suffices for her to know that even as a little poison, the whole thing goes into the trash can.
That's why so many Catholics leave the church today, because of...
Because they're fooling around. Yes, yes. That's why the instinct that the moment I know there's leprosy in it, I walk away and get out. That's the Catholic instinct. It's a good instinct. But to say it's got leprosy and therefore I've got to walk away is one thing. To say it's got leprosy in some of its parts, therefore it has leprosy in all its parts, is another thing. That's an exaggeration. Which will destroy your credit if you make exaggerated statements like that. You're absolutely entitled to conclude from leprosy in part to I walk away. But you're not entitled to conclude leprosy in part, therefore all the parts are leprous. It's not true. It's not true. It's just like, and the church settled that years and years ago, for instance, the Donatist heresy. It was a heresy. When a Donatist minister, priest, baptized, it was a heretic baptizing. But the Catholic Church said the Donatist baptisms are valid. That is the Catholic Church's thinking. That the Donatist baptism, there was a tremendous controversy about it. And there was a great saint, Saint Cyprian, was against, as if I got it right, was against the validity of the Donatist baptism. But the church said these baptisms are valid. Because he had the form, he had the matter, and he had the right intention, even if he was a no-good heretic. Still, he put everything in place. And therefore it's valid. And to say that Donatist baptisms are invalid is an exaggeration which is not true. It's complicated. It makes life more complicated, I know, but truth is more important than simplicity. Often the truth is simple, but not always. For instance, when does day turn into night? The day turns into night is certain, but I can't, you know, and then there's a moment which is usually fixed when after then is day and from then on is night. But nevertheless, there's a grey area there. There are grey areas in life. The grey areas must not be allowed to confuse day and night. Day is different from night, and night is different from day. But between the two, there is a grey area. You can't deny it. It's a fact. Grey does not say black is white and white is black. But grey does exist, and grey is a mixture of black and white. What is black is not white, and what is white is not black. The black and white are quite different, but the two do get mixed up. And when they are mixed up, I can't stand in front of dusk and say, this is pure day or this is pure night, because it's just not true. Dusk, if I stand in front of dusk, I have to say, this is a mixture between day and night. What is day is not night, what is not is night is not day, but nevertheless, here the two are mixed.
But you can't say that night is forming or day is forming.
Oh, you can say that night is on its way.
That's what I'm saying. That is a definite statement then.
Night is on its way.
Right, that's still.
That is true.
Because somehow it seems to me like the pro-death people use that exact same argument for the formation of the fetus. At which point does it...
There's a different, you know, I mean...
No, but I'm saying they use that gray area.
But there's no gray area whether a woman is pregnant or not.
Yeah.
No woman is half pregnant. No woman has ever been sort of... half pregnant. Well, she's either pregnant or she isn't. It's one or the other.
Well, I'm saying that the gray, you always hear that, well, you don't know exactly at what point. Nobody knows.
No, that's just not true.
Yeah. So,
you know, from the moment of conception that there is life. Because life is not a quality, life is a substance. Substance is either are or are not. It's qualities which a shade, but substances are or are not.
All right? Let's see. Would you agree that there are no gray areas between the Gospels? It's a chart way up there. It's a few way back. There are no coincidences.
Yes, right,
no
right.
And you notice how man, you know, there's something about man. He can't even get his mother-in-law in order. He's trying to fix all his gray area and all this stuff. Doesn't that bother you? Like that, for instance, deathbed conversions. Now, what incarnation did come up with this? Deathbed conversions and all this stuff. You know, it's kind of weird, isn't it?
It's for sure that the villains play with gray areas. That's for sure. Therefore, gray areas are something of a minefield. You have to be careful. But you can't deny that they exist, you know, and you've got to, if it is a minefield, you've got to walk carefully, but it's there, the mines are there, it's a reality. Let's come back to Prashendi. We were seeing that notice then, these four words, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, and I beg of you, read the original, read Prashendi. In between conferences, read, so that, you know, you're, don't just take the summary isn't enough. Read the Pope and then come back with a summary. Read the summary and then come back with the Pope. Read the two together. From the skeleton to the flesh, back to the skeleton to the flesh and so on, so you can pick it all up. Alright, then you see 7 to 13, faith, revelation, supernatural and dogma are all completely changed in meaning. Faith means my gut honking up. Revelation means the honking up. Supernatural means natural. And dogma means expressing what makes me feel good. So the word has been totally changed from its Catholic meaning, which is why we put it in inverted commas, because now the word has a completely different meaning. All right, we move on to the second section, the believer. Remember, the heavy weight in Prashendi is the doctrine, and we've got seven parts: the philosopher, firstly, the believer, the theologian, and you see that the basic problem here has got nothing to do with theology. It's a problem an error about the way the human mind knows reality. And that's pure philosophy. But that error is so radical that it messes up everything in a person's mind, because it messes up his whole relation with reality. I say, but on this system you get a squeegee mind. Why do you get a squeegee mind? Because the contents of that mind come from inside. You know, it's just sort of squeege coming up. That's all. That's why you call it the squeegee mind. And if tomorrow I have completely different coming up from my gut, then I believe something tomorrow completely different. So there's nothing fixed or steady in my mind. It all depends upon my gut. And if I eat too much green cheese, I'm going to have a completely different creed. That's what it amounts to, right? Alright, we move on to the believer. Second section of the believer. The nature of quote-unquote belief. Because belief is obviously completely changed, just like faith was. The divine is knowable as reality by a supra-rational experience. There's a real buzzword of the modernists, experience. So the divine is something that I experience, man. I experience it. I feel it. Right. This experience or religious sense is what makes the believer who says, I believe in God, Father, Almighty, and Father. Therefore, all religions in which there is any religious sense are equally valid. You should knock out that comma in between religious and sense. All religions in which there is a religious sense are equally valid. See, there's a little comma in between. For 14b, there's a little comma between religious and sense, which should be knocked out. All religions in which there is any religious sense are equally valid. And so we're straight into ecumenism. All you need have is human nature, with needs, with a vitality, with a sense and experience, and you've got a religion. And you've got a revelation. If you express that religion, you've got dogmas. You've got a supernatural. Therefore, it doesn't matter what religion you belong to, just so long as your gut projects something onto the phenomena, you've got a religion. Doesn't matter whether you're Christian, Catholic or not, makes no difference at all. Therefore, all religions are valid. And that's what the Pope says. Of course, the Christianity, Catholicism, is a little more valid than the others, because it's better at revealing what is inside us. But that's all. Yes?
I believe there's a statement that the new catechism
yes.
calls the other religions in the shadow of the real religion. Yeah. So they would still be admitting that the other religions are somewhat inferior, right? By the term shadow.
Yes. Yes. Catholicism is a little more valid than the others.
So
right? They're all valid, but Catholicism is a little more... all religions are equal, but Catholicism is a little more equal than all the others. That's what they believe. It's hair-raising. Absolutely hair-raising. So, 14b, we immediately go into ecumenism, then we get the idea of tradition. Tradition. This is the modernist understanding of tradition. Tradition is simply an original experience so transmitted as to stimulate or awaken the religious sense. Let's take, for instance, God of God, light of light, true God of true God. We have these, that's the Nicene Creed, which is 325. So, after 300 years of Catholics' guts rocking and rolling with the phenomenon of the Nazarene, at last, somebody comes up with Deum Deum Lumen Lumen Deum Verum Deum Verum. And that is a formula which so vibrates everybody's guts from then on that it's handed down from generation to... it's a super vibrator. And tradition is a collection of super vibrators.
So tradition is the deposit of experience transmitted by magisterium church, according to this.
The magisterium gets completely changed. We'll come to the magisterium. Yes, the tradition is a collection of super expressions of experiences. It's a classical collection of vibrators. It's a collection of classical vibrators. In other words, vibrators that have shown what they can do. Vibrators that have made a whole lot of guts vibrate down the ages. That's all it is. Yes? But if tradition, if these vibrators no longer make 7377477757 generation vibrate, then tradition is over and done with. And we'll have to change it and establish a new. We'll have to get a new set of vibrators to make 7477577 guts vibrate. That's all tradition is.
What is living tradition? What's meant by that?
Well, living tradition is exactly what the Pope means by living tradition is a tradition which the magisterium, which the living magisterium says is tradition. So that the living tradition is what the living magisterium says tradition is. So if I, the Pope, say that Archbishop Lefebvre's tradition is no longer tradition, then it no longer is tradition. That's the old fuddy-duddy backwards and out-of-date tradition. Tradition is what I say tradition is. I say Cardinal Ratzinger's tradition, therefore Cardinal Ratzinger's tradition, because I, the Pope, say it. That's living tradition.
I see, so that term has just come out recently. It's not been... my understanding of living tradition was the accumulation of all the traditions and councils of the churches, whatever.
Of course, but their understanding is that it's what the magisterium says. Tradition is what the magisterium says it is. And if the magisterium tomorrow said that 2 and 2 is 5 is tradition, from tomorrow onwards, 2 and 2 is 5 would be tradition. Now, my answer to you, very baldly and roughly, it's not their answer. My answer to you is that the living tradition means the tradition as laid down by the living magisterium. And they seriously think that the magisterium can say what they like as far as tradition is concerned. Right? You and I know, if you and I have the faith, you and I know that tradition is independent of the magisterium. Right? That the magisterium is there in order to serve tradition. Yes?
In our diocesan paper, I noticed the term the traditioning church.
The traditioning.
Are Billy Graham and Von Imp, are they working on this principle, like that feeling?
The Protestants, yes.
I love that. You know, and then it makes the music and they all come out.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. Strobe lights and whatever makes you feel good. Especially
so he's working on the feelings.
Yes. Make them feel really good, and then they'll throw a $20 bill into the bucket. They don't feel so good, it'll only be a $10 bill. It's bucks. All right. Then, tradition is simply an original experience so handed down that it succeeds in making the next generation vibrate as well. And if the next generation and the next generation and the next generation vibrate, people realize that they've got a first-class vibrator. And so they hand down the collection of vibrators, and the collection of vibrators handed down is what makes tradition. I'm speaking as a modernist. Don't believe me, Joseph. I'm speaking as a modernist, all right? Then when you... But, of course, it follows from that, that if a classical collection of vibrators no longer made me vibrate, what would I have to do with the collection?
Trash it.
Throw it out. That's it. And therefore, that's why the modern generation has got to throw out all this 19th, 18th, 17th, 16th, 15th century stuff, because it's no longer making the youngsters in the pews vibrate. If it did, well, we could keep it. But if it doesn't, throw it out. Larry?
What happens to keep some of them happy and not others? Who determines that it maintains, it stays part of what they call the tradition?
Well, that's one reason why the official church today is a little bit nice to the old fuddy-duddy traditionalists.
Right. I mean, how can they say that we can't, if we enjoy it, although we don't claim to believe it their way?
Yes, that's it. They will allow it to us just so long as we don't say that there's any trace of absolute truth in it. But we are absolutely refusing a vibrator because it makes us vibrate. That's not at all what tradition is for us.
That's what we end up with all of our...
Yes, exactly. The folk use that very expression in Ecclesia Dei. For those who feel better with the old stuff, well, let them have a little bit of their old stuff. Right? And we'll feed them enough old stuff that when what we need to do is to re-educate them, to bring them around to the new stuff so that they understand what they really ought to be vibrating with.
So then he was completely consistent in what he was doing. It was not like he was conceding anything.
In a sense, he's consistent, yes. What he conceded was not what we wanted. But what he conceded, yes. And therefore the concessions of today's Rome, you must beware of them like the plague. Right? Because it is no sign at all. The indolence and Ecclesia Dei and St. Peter's and all of these things, it's no sign at all that they've understood what the score really is. They are only... what's going to be the proof that they have understood, anybody? What will prove that they've understood? Reuben, don't answer, because your answer would not be fit to print. What would be the proof that they would understand?
Well, adherence to a traditional doctrine.
What would be the litmus test of whether they are adhering really to true tradition or not to some completely vibrating tradition?
The persecution from the lack of ecumenism from now on from the non-Catholics, they would view it as, oh no, they're going back to the Dark Ages again.
Give me a litmus test by which we might tell that Rome has really at last understood and converted and got back to the truth.
When they started being persecuted by the
world. By the world.
Yes. What would be their attitude towards the Saracens and Pius X?
With providence and
forgiveness. With praise, St. Pius X.
They'd say, you guys were right all along. And the immediate proof, whether they meant business, you're quite right to say, would be if they immediately got persecuted by the media. The moment Rome starts getting really persecuted by the media again, that would be a good indication. And hated by the world, hated by practically everybody, hated and persecuted by everybody, that would be a good sign that they were back to the truth. It wouldn't be the conclusive proof, but it would be a good sign of it. And they would stop persecuting us. That would be a good test, when they would stop persecuting us. All right, let's go on. So you can see that tradition, hence in 15, you can see tradition is put in inverted commas, because that has had its meaning completely changed. It's the same bottle with the same label, T-R-A-D-I-T-I-O-N, but the content is totally different. What about the problem with faith and science? Phenomenal science and ultra-phenomenal faith have alien objects. Now, there's a clash, there's meant to be a clash between faith and science. In this system, faith and science is going to be resolved. Because here are the phenomena. Now, science deals with the phenomena. That science is serious. Now, that's really serious business. I go in my laboratory, I put on a white coat, I've got little test tubes, I observe the phenomena. And I see there are three bubbles dancing up this one, and two bubbles dancing up them, three bubbles, two doubles, that's something I see with my eyes. Now that's serious. That I know because it's phenomena. So science is serious because it's the phenomena. It doesn't pretend to go beyond the phenomena, it stops at the phenomena. Right? But faith goes, is the other side of the phenomena. Right? Science remains this side of the phenomena, faith remains that side of the phenomena, so what happens to the clash between faith and science? It's over. There's no clash.
There's nothing on the other side.
Because they're in completely different departments. So that is like boxers. One boxer is in one ring, another boxer is in another ring. How can they fight? Because they're in two different rings. Science is this side of the phenomena, faith is the other side, therefore there's no clash. Whew. That's one problem that could be easily solved, don't you think? So, phenomenal science and faith, which is ultra-phenomenal, or on the other side of the phenomena, have alien objects. They're objects which are quite different from one another. Therefore, there's no clash. However, faith is in fact, the new version of faith, is in fact subordinate to science. And that's quite a difficult little paragraph, and I've summarized it as to one phenomena, two idea, about three unity of mind, that you'll have to read in the original. But the truth of the matter is, this version is condemned. Pius IX declared that philosophy is to serve and not command in matters of religion. That's Catholic. So you've got a couple of Catholic sentences. Pope Pius X quotes a bit of Catholicism amidst all this nonsense. Philosophy is to serve and not command in matters of religion. That's Catholic. Gregory IX said that puffed up theologians were making philosophy, which is a servant, into a queen. So that again is Catholic. So the Pope is quoting condemnations of this completely false way of relating faith and science.
Into a queen,
that's right. A famous paragraph 18 is very famous. The Pope says, Pope Pius X says that with the modernists, you get one page which is Catholic, another page which is heretical, the next page is Catholic, and so on. Why are these modernists capable of writing or of talking like a Catholic so as to even fool you?
They're possessed.
They change the meanings of the word.
Why are they capable of writing like a Catholic? That's a different kind of explanation. What in their system enables them to look like a Catholic in such a way as to deceive a whole lot of people?
They're always using Catholic terms.
That's what you're saying, yes. They're using Catholic terms. It goes a little deeper than that, even, the fact they're using Catholic terms. For instance, I could call my dog science and my cat faith, and then if my dog and my cat get on together, that's the solution of the problem between faith and science. But that's just words. It goes deeper than words. How on the modernist system, why does the modernist system enable them to keep up the appearances? They use the Catholic words. It goes a little further than that.
It's because the way they think.
Lack of reality. Isn't it a vengeance against Holy Mother Church?
Well, many of the members come from within the church.
Ratzinger is constantly saying things which you can interpret as Catholic.
Yeah.
Ambiguity.
Maybe he wants to become.
They believe their own error.
Why is it? Because. What am I trying to say? They are. They. Because the placid, they can maintain the appearances, but the content is completely different. Even when they maintain the appearances, the content is completely different. They imitate the real religion. They're plastic, it's a new plastic religion. It's completely plastic. It's completely man-made. But the plastic is made to resemble the real thing, like a plastic baseball made to resemble a real baseball. So that you could be deceived. If he threw it from the diamond, you know, you could get from the mound, you could be deceived because it's so like it. But the reason is because the modernists imitate the old thing. And it's in there, you see, they don't change the phenomena. Therefore, when a modernist describes the phenomena, he describes what we also see. The phenomena, there also are phenomena. It's just that behind them he puts something completely different. When Ratzinger is spinning phenomena, it sounds Catholic. But then when you see, he says something which shows what he means behind the phenomena, you suddenly realize it's not Catholic at all. All he's been doing is spinning words. Behind the words is something completely different. So it comes back to the fact that they use the same words. And they make the words dance in a Catholic way. It looks Catholic, but then, you know, you turn the page and it's so un-Catholic, you suddenly realize that even when he was looking Catholic, it can't mean anything of that at all. Yes.
Sort of, he can come with the same interpretation of the phenomena, but the way he got there.
Yes, it's completely different. Let me give you an example of how the appearance and the reality. The a plastic instead of the real thing. So here is the real McCoy, and here is plastic. Okay, now this is an argument for the existence of God. What is true. That's real. Plastic, what I feel, is true. Right? What is true. Now, God is. What follows? Now, I feel God. Therefore, you follow? It looks exactly the same. When you come to the conclusion, it looks exactly the same. Then when Cardinal Ratzinger says God is true, you think he's Catholic. But if you scratch Ratzinger a little, or people like him, what you find is, behind it is a principle which is absolutely off the wall. But since he comes back to the appearance of Catholicism, right? But this is a plastic God. This isn't the real God at all. Because what God is this God here on this side? Why is this God plastic? It's just my feeling. I feel God is true at 4 o'clock in the evening when I've had a glass of beer. But at 8 o'clock in the morning when I get up, I don't feel like that at all. Therefore, at 8 o'clock, God is not true, and at 4 o'clock in the afternoon, he is true. That's not the real God. Right? And yet, you see, the appearance is exactly the same. There's an example of how the appearances are the same, but the one is totally plastic and the other is the real thing. And this is a classic example because this is, or what I want is true. That's Kant. What I want is true. It's the same thing. You're making truth into a function of the feeling. Instead of being a function of reality, right?
So
subjectivism. Yes.
Ratzinger is a disciple of Kant.
Yes, ultimately yes. He's directly a disciple of Karl Rahner, but all these people are disciples of Kant. Yes.
Your Honor is
Karl Rahner is a Kantian. Kantian, yes. Yeah.
Sorry.
Oh, absolutely. They're all rotten. They've got rotten minds.
This is logic, classical logic mistake. What is the exact name of this mistake?
The logic is perfectly good.
No.
What is wrong is the premise.
Principle is wrong. Conclusion is proper, but the principle is wrong, right?
The principle is the premise is wrong. That's not a mistake of logic. The logic is good. This conclusion follows logically from these two premises. And yet the conclusion looks good. But the conclusion is in fact rotten because the premise is rotten. The major is rotten. Right? But it looks good. You can't tell it's plastic until you put your weight on it. Right? Yes.
And that's so much the element you hear from the humanists is that exactly that. We're all going towards the same thing, so why are we asking about how we're getting there?
Yeah,
that's what they're saying. The exact same thing. Yeah.
We all feel it's just lunacy, simple lunacy. That with modernists, one page is Catholic, the next page is rationalist, and so on. Because you see, the modernist, when he argues with premises like this, on one page he says, I feel good, and therefore God is true, and it looks Catholic. And then on the next page he says, I no longer feel God, and therefore God is not true, and you suddenly realize you've got a heretic on your hands. And then the next page, he feels God again. Page 3, he feels God again. And so God is true. And you sort of say, oh, he's Catholic after all. And then page 4, he's back to, I no longer feel God, so God is no longer true. And that's how they work.
So you may say that all this system is based not on facts, but on feelings.
Absolutely. It's this. It's not based on facts, the tree out here. It's based on feelings coming up from inside me. And so the feelings can sometimes say, project onto the phenomena what a Catholic gets off the phenomena, namely the truth. But if the feelings turn around on Tuesday, it's completely different. Then the feelings come back on Wednesday, but it all depends on feelings. That's not the real God.
Isn't that how you quote the Pope and quote him to their liking?
Sorry, is that how?
Is that how everyone can seem to quote the same person, the Pope, for example, or Cardinal?
Yes, yes.
Everyone can sort of
yes.
quote that they like.
Yes, because the Pope will one day say something that looks Catholic, and the next day he says something that's not Catholic at all, because he's got this crazy principle. Whereas you can see, if all people have this principle, and if there's one reality out there, and everybody submits his mind to reality, what's going to happen? Everybody's going to agree. There's the unity of the truth, and that's the unity of Catholics. Even without the Pope, you poor miserable traditionalist jerks, let me say, we poor traditionalist miserable jerks, we go to Hawaii, we go to Timbuktu, and if we find a bunch of other poor traditionalist jerks, we're on exactly the same wavelength. Even without the Pope, it's astonishing. The unity amongst traditional Catholics today is astonishing, given that they've got no authority pulling them together. What is so pulls us all together, all over the world, is the truth. Because all of us are submitting, thanks be to God, our minds to the same one reality. And therefore, all of us have our minds on the same wavelength. And that's the real unity. But it's not the unity of ecumenism.
Yeah, Excellency, you mentioned the word rationalist. I think you should later on, maybe in the afternoon, explain a little bit more, because that's one of my things. But I have an idea, but not complete. And it's the first time you mentioned rationalist, you know. So
well, rationalism is simply, you know, putting my reason, making my reason into God, making my reason into God. You're my feeling. Here, it's my feelings of God. Read Pius X's own paragraph. Read paragraph, find out which paragraph it is from the English copy, and then read that, or it's the end of the section on the believer, De Gloibili. So find the last section on the believer. Read Pius X for explanations. Don't just take my, you know, explanation. Read what the Pope himself says. You had one more question.
Yeah, if these people think it's based on what I feel.
Yes.
That's what Protestants think.
Exactly.
So then really, we already have the one world religion. I mean, it's there as Protestantism.
Now you go back to the schema which we had on the first day, grandfather Protestantism. Yes, Kant is a child of Protestantism.
Well then, in effect, then the one world religion is basically here now.
Insofar as most people are under this under Protestantism, if you like. Yes, but it's Protestantism taken in a very broad sense. So broad as to include also Mohammedanism, Buddhism, as to include absolutely everything. And that is actually, what is the name of the religion which actually, if you take Protestantism in its strict sense, it doesn't include Mohammedanism, Buddhism. What is the religion that includes Protestantism, old-fashioned Protestantism, Mohammedanism, Buddhism, Catholicism? What's the name of this religion? Somebody.
Modern.
Human.
Well, we'll give up.
Masonry.
Oh, yeah.
Masonry. That's exactly, this is exactly what Masonry pushes. It's that union of all minds in
the Brotherhood of God.
In the Brotherhood of Man. All right, we'll pick up again at 2:30. I beg you, have got time of your own. I beg you, do read for yourself what the Pope says, you know. Because, you know, the explanation then, what the Pope says, and the expression of what the Pope says, you'll get a lot more out of it if you read what the Pope says.
Okay.